Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host, sports journalist David Todd. And from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Talking Steelers like no one else does. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information, and I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 19, and the Steelers start the season 1-0, Dave, a 21-18 victory over the Cleveland Browns. But I think probably for the average fan, more disappointment than elation with a game where the offense struggled, the defense gave up a late drive for a touchdown to make it tight, and good gracious, as Mike Tomlin pointed out, the penalties, right about that.
Gloom, despair, and agony on me. That's from the oldie, Hee-Haw, in case any of you young people wonder what the hell I'm singing about this morning. Look, 1-0 after 1 week here obviously wasn't a superior performance against a Browns team. Steelers, of course, favored by, 9 points in this game. The penalties, my God, 13 for 144 yards versus just 4 for 61 for the Browns. I mean, you want to talk about, tough to overcome when you consider that the Steelers, the turnover battle was even. I think the explosive plays were pretty even as well, too. And normally when you have situations such as that and, you have that big of a differential in a penalty in penalties, that could usually be the difference in a win or a loss. But they obviously came out with a win. We got a lot to talk about, on both sides of the ball, and I guess outside of the penalties, which I think five or six of those were on the offensive side of the ball. We can start on that side if you'd like.
Yeah, and as always, we like to start with the injuries. And after blowing up the first two plays of the game, Stephon Tuitt left with a left biceps injury. And let's prepare for the worst here because I guess according to a tweet from Adam Schefter last night and some others, there is speculation that this is a torn biceps, which would end Stephon Tuitt's season a day after signing his $60 or $61 million 6-year deal with the team. That would obviously be I don't want to say a crushing blow, but a very big loss for this defense to lose a player of his caliber. And Dave, it's one of those things where he's listed as questionable to come back in the game after two plays, and that's the type of thing where with something like that, it's not going to get better over the course of the game. It is what it is. And as I tweeted at the time, I don't expect to see him back in the game. We didn't see him back. And now we just wait for the results. But how devastating a loss for the defense if Tua's out for the year.
Yeah, and when you look at those first two plays that he was involved in on as well, maybe we'll see something when the All-22's released. But to me, it's hard to see, kind of how he suffered that injury. Now you can't.
Can't see it on the tape.
Right, and now when he runs to the sideline after going after, who was it, Duke Johnson, I think, or Corral, forget which back he was chasing out of bounds there for the loss there, you can see him grab for that left arm, but, you can't actually see, okay, well, this might have been how he did it on those first two plays. And like I said, maybe the coach's tape will show us a little bit more, but regardless of what it shows us or doesn't show us, it all depends on what the MRI comes back on. And, this is a guy prime for prime for a big season. I thought he played extremely well during the preseason. If the first two plays were any indication of the kind of season he was going to have, he certainly will be missed. Now, the team obviously brought in Tyson Alualu early during the free agency process. I thought during the preseason, I thought Alualu played well. My initial two times through the tape of yesterday's game – tell me that he played well, you know, in that game against the Browns. So, but regardless, he's not Stephon Tuitt. So there is a step back there, and then now you run into a situation where everybody comes up the rung a notch on top of it. You know, you're going to have LT Walton playing more snaps. You would think that maybe, you know, God bless Daniel McCullers for making a team, but you know, is he going to be a guy that you're going to want to dress now you know, more often? You might have to because, you know, LT Walton, he might be your backup nose tackle. But if he's still having to log some extra time as a defensive end, you know, maybe you have to activate a guy like McCullers. And then, you know, maybe you check the free agent market out there. I don't remember. Was Ricardo Matthews, did he miss the final cuts after spending time with another team there? Maybe he's a guy you consider re-signing, you know, as a sixth defensive lineman should you have to put Tuitt on IR. But, you know, I suspect we'll hear the official news either today or, you know, at the latest on Tuesday when Mike Tomlin holds his press conference.
Yeah, it's interesting because immediately my mind while we were sitting here talking, it's, you know, I was more favorable about Ricardo Matthews than a lot of people. I thought Ricardo Matthews had a decent season last year, and I was a little bit surprised the Steelers didn't bring him back. I think they did upgrade with Alualu, but he's currently a free agent, as far as I know. He's 30 years old, and you have to think, you know, he and Johnny Maxey are, you know, potential candidates to get that first phone call. the Steelers, in terms of just thinking about their depth chart for those who haven't, you know, thought about it since the last cuts, Lavon Hooks is the defensive lineman on the practice squad. And Dave, you know, the benefit the Steelers have here, and we saw it with his, you know, I thought he played, one of the guys who had the best games yesterday was Javon Hargrave. I thought he was excellent. And I think Javon Hargrave is a good enough player that you can play him in sub-package football with two down linemen. And, you know, he and Cam can be the two guys in there. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how Keith Butler and John Mitchell want to scheme this going forward and what they do with the personnel. But you got to think there's going to be a move here. Now, obviously, if Stephon Tuitt goes to the IR, I would think the initial move here will be to re-sign Stevie Johnson. We didn't get to this, but on Saturday, we talked a lot on Friday about what the roster move would be. I was told that Stevie Johnson was a lock to not be the guy cut because he was running first-team special teams with all the units. That turned out to not be the case. He gets his game check because he was on the roster past Tuesday. So this didn't cost Stevie Johnson any money, and they sign him today or tomorrow, depending on what happens with Stephon Tuitt. Then you've filled your roster, and then it's a question of, you know, how long do you want to run here with the mix of D linemen and linebackers being slightly different. But That would be the expectation. I'm with you. You know, is this who gets the call here? Is it Lavon Hooks? Is it Stevie Johnson just fills the roster spot, or do you call Johnny Maxey, or do you call you know, somebody like Ricardo Matthews to see if he's available?
Yeah, and I think Ricardo Matthews would, you know, obviously you'd want to kind of promote from within. I mean, the fact that the team moved on from Ricardo Matthews the way that they did probably speaks, volumes there, if you ask me. Now a guy like Cooks, was obviously kind of the favorite of John Mitchell there as far as reserves go, and then of course he did, you know, land where he landed there after the final cuts and all. But, you know, I would think a guy like him, he's a guy I think that can give you snaps both inside and as a five technique as well too. Obviously not prime. I mean, you don't want to get in a situation where whoever it is beyond guys like Cam Hayward, Tyson Alualu, and LT Walton.
Alualu and LT Walton are the guys who you would expect to get the bulk of the snaps.
Yeah, and the thing is you still, you know, John Mitchell, I think, still, and the rest of the, you know, the Steelers, Mike Tomlin, going to want to go into games with six defensive linemen. Now, obviously, they'll only continue to dress five of those, but Yeah, I mean, there's no way around it. This is a big blow. But once again, you know, we'll see how Tyson Alulu will really be under the microscope right now, and as will LT Walton. And LT Walton played, you know, good percentage of snaps. And LT Walton is a guy, look, I mean, definitely not a great pass rusher. But we've seen him do some decent things over the last, you know, this previous preseason, and then last season, as far as him, you know, getting off blocks and playing against the run. So not ideal. Who knows? You might get in a situation where you might have to play Cameron Hayward more snaps than what you originally intended to. But so far, so good with Alulu. And look, this injury is not going to be the difference of whether or not the Steelers, you know, make a run into the playoffs this year.
You certainly would hope not, because obviously all signs point here to something that looks like it could be season ending. Dave, the inactives, the pretty straightforward for the list. Excuse me, we hadn't seen Friday's practice when we talked, and Bud Dupree did not go Friday, and so he was inactive. And then joined by Josh Dobbs, Justin Hunter, the two offensive linemen, no surprise, Gerald Hawkins and Matt Filer, and then McCullers and Brian Allen. Dupree was the one that's interesting, and then Justin Hunter being inactive. Anything to add into the level of surprise on any of that?
No, I mean, I predicted that Dupree would dress and that Arthur Motes would be down, but, you know, when Dupree was rolled out, that made Motes up. So you know, I missed one of the seven this week there, but no surprises across the board with any of those other names. And I mean, guys like Filer and Hawkins are going to likely be down every week. Joshua Dobbs, of course, will be down every week. If the wide receivers stay healthy, Hunter's probably going to be down every week. And we'll see what happens with McCullers depending on what happens with Tuitt and a guy like Brian Allen, too. You know, you might get to a point later on in the season where Brian Allen might become a better option for you than a guy like Cody Sensabaugh. So maybe later on in the season, Allen can start getting a special teams helmet over a guy like Sensabaugh. But for right now, there's no reason to think Brian Allen will dress. So no huge surprises there. I think the only players that did not log any playing time in that game against the Browns were, of course, Landry Jones and B.J. Finney. Now, a guy like Chris Hubbard, I don't think he played any offensive snaps, but I think I saw him out there a little bit on special teams as well, too.
Yeah, okay. So let's get to it. And, well, Dave, let's start with the offense. This is the questions are obviously going to be a little bit, you know, Le'Veon Bell, did his lack of being in camp impact how the Steelers performed in this game? And then the follow-up is obviously Ben Roethlisberger was very limited in the preseason. Does that make did that cause some of the rustiness and maybe confusion, continuity between he and his receivers? Let's just address that first, because I think for a lot of people, that's the question. I still hold to my view that Le'Veon Bell not being there didn't have any impact on how that game went yesterday in terms of his running ability. But I think it is fair to question the continuity with the receivers if they don't get a chance to do it at all during the preseason.
This looked like a team that only played like or an offense looked like they played about, you know, however many total snaps it was that Roethlisberger played during the preseason. Look, there's no two ways around it. They look flat, but on the flip side, I mean, the running game. You know, what did we say before this game when it came to Le'Veon Bell? The narrative was going to be very, very easy for people to create. Either Le'Veon Bell had a great game, had something like 140, 150 total yards, and everybody's going to say, football shape. If Le'Veon Bell had a poor game and the Steelers didn't run the football well, then, oh, yeah, there you go. That's what you get for sitting out all of training camp and all of the preseason. It showed. Those are the consequences that Mike Tomlin talked about this holdout there. So, you know, you're not going to probably be able to change any minds when it comes to any of that. But I did like, you know, what Mike Tomlin had to say after the game, talking about how the penalties and how they stayed behind the chains a lot really kind of affected, you know, what they did running football. David, do you know how many plays, now this does not count, The good thing about the games at 1 o'clock, David, is I can get all my initial charting done and the playbook stripped, so I can have a lot of data to work with on these podcasts here. But not counting the final two kneel downs by by Roethlisberger. How many offensive plays did the Steelers run where they needed more than 10 yards to go?
Out of 57, I would guess that number's probably around half. More than 10 or 10 and more or more?
One,
is 10 included?
Three. No. 10's not included. It has to be more than 10. More
okay, than, more, I'll, out of 57, I'll say, I'll guess 11.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. How does 13 sound? And that does not, and obviously, now subtract from your total total plays, subtract the final two kneel downs, because those
There were 60 offensive plays, so I subtracted the three kneel downs.
Okay, well, subtract only two. Because first and 10, you're kneeling down, so.
I thought he knelt down three times, but okay.
He did, but it was a first and 10 on the first one, right?
Yep.
So 13 divided by.
It's about 20%.
That's a lot of damn. That's a lot of damn plays behind the chains. Am I right?
Yeah. And Mike made, you know, that was very, Mike was very clear in his postgame presser that, right about that. We got ourselves behind the chains with penalties and ineffectiveness, and that's why the run game wasn't good.
Now, how many runs did they have on those 13 plays?
Well, they had third and a million, and they handed it to Le'Veon Bell for about a yard gain.
That was third and Canton, third and 21.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. We didn't see Le'Veon Bell break the line of scrimmage until midway through the fourth quarter. I mean, there was Juju, not in a very auspicious debut with two holding calls, but one got called back because of that, and then he had, you know, his one double-digit gain, I think, came, you know, just in the next to last drive. So, nothing good about the running game.
No, not at all. The offensive line, the offensive line wasn't great in open up holes, at least from the TV view. We'll see what the all 22 probably ain't going to, you know, look any better there. Vance McDonald, not a good handful of snaps from him. Juju, two holding calls early. And look, when you want to talk about the offensive line not having a great day, run blocking great. The wide receivers didn't either. Eli Rogers needs to do a little bit better job out there on the edge as well too. I know a lot of people are upset with a lot of the early offensive play selections with a lot of those quick passes and all like that. But you know defenses are kind of inviting that when they're playing. When they're doing their best,
safeties are up high and
right. Playing the corners a little bit off and all like that. You know, a lot of that stuff. You know, people want to put a lot of that on Todd Haley, but you know, a lot of that stuff too is some RPO stuff where, you know, Ben looks at it, counts the box, looks at what's out there. You know, they were inviting that kind of stuff and probably willing to take their chances on run game alternatives, if you will. And they did a fairly good job of coming up and tackling that kind of stuff as well too, and beating blocks of guys like Jesse James and McDonald and Eli Rogers and all out on the edge there. And look, I mean, we are one red zone interception tip ball, in the second half by Roethlisberger from this probably being a 28-18. Would listeners or and readers and fans and whatnot feel better, David, if this game was 28-18 instead
of sure, sure, Sure. I mean, the offense, you know, the reality is the offense put up 2 touchdowns. That was it. So, I mean, we haven't gotten to the block punt. We haven't talked about the positives here with Antonio Brown. But it was an offense. Look, if I would describe Ben's performance as pedestrian. He didn't throw the ball downfield much. I think you had him down charted for 4 deep balls. He went 2 for 4, and there was a pass interference call on Antonio Brown as well. You know, they didn't attack the deep, the intermediate or deep middle of the field. You know, the pass batted down that looked like they were trying to go to Eli Rogers, and then a couple plays later, the interception, and then maybe one or two more. I mean, you think about it, the tipped ball that Antonio Brown caught in the second quarter that got the Steelers on their way on that scoring drive. So that's a couple balls that Ben Roethlisberger threw into the middle of the field, and they were tipped and, you know, one intercepted. Ben's had some trouble throwing into the deep middle of the field. I mean, it's not the easiest place to throw for sure. And that, you know, they took, as you pointed out, they took a lot of the underneath stuff, the quick stuff. But I think it was the touchdown throw was an excellent throw. He squeezed, you know, it was a tough read, and he squeezed it in a tight window, and Jesse James made a good catch, a very good catch. But, you know, it wasn't Ben's best game on a lot of the short throws. I mean, the opening throw of the second half to Le'Veon Bell threw it behind him. He missed some guys high early. It was an average performance at best.
David, I think nowadays if you Google who owns the Cleveland Browns, I think Ben Roethlisberger comes up as the answer. You know, for his career heading into this game, Roethlisberger was 20-2 against the Browns and 10-2 when playing them in Cleveland. He's obviously 11-2 now. Now, in those 12 previous games, David, that Roethlisberger has played the Browns in Cleveland. Now, remind you, he was 10-2. Roethlisberger had only averaged 219.6 yards passing. Okay, 219.6 yards passing in 12 games in which he's 10-2. And what did he throw yesterday? 263 and 2 touchdowns. So he was, this might have been Roethlisberger's third best game of his career in Cleveland against the Browns. In fact, I think he's only thrown for more than, I think Roethlisberger's only thrown for more than 280 yards once and only over 300 yards once in those, in 13 games that he's played in Cleveland there. So, and look, credit, the Browns being kind of aggressive there, as you would think Greg Williams type defense would be. Is this any, are we making any excuses? No, the offense should have executed better. But those penalties, when you're behind the chains and you're trying to get yourself in a second, in a more manageable 2nd and 10 or a 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7 situation because of penalties on previous plays, it really does kind of limit what you can do. Now, you want to talk about having a guy on your team that can take over a game.
Let me wrap up, Ben, before we get to AB. How would you assess, in just a sentence or a few words, how would you assess his performance?
I thought pedestrian was fine, what you used. I mean, a better second half than the first half. You know, non-rhythmic.
Yes, I'm with you there. But unfortunately, it was also thoughtfully non-rhythmic.
Thoughtfully non-rhythmic.
Okay, so AB, go ahead, lead the charge.
Yeah, but you want to talk about a guy that can – you want to talk about having a guy on your team that can single-handedly take over a football game. I mean, superlatives. You run out of ways to describe what the arguably the best wide receiver in the league can do. I mean, even some of those catches that he made yesterday, at least two of them, you know, obviously the last one was huge. In fact, I thought for sure that was going to get overturned. But the one earlier in the game, well, I mean, he had one that was tipped that he had concentration and.
Yeah, I think there were three that were varying levels of spectacular. The one in the second quarter that was tipped, that he caught and he ran from. That was the 50-yard gain. I think the for me, the play that might have been, you know, the most spectacular catch is the slant, the little slant he was running on, I think, third and four, where the DB is just holding his left arm. So he's got to catch it one-handed, which he does, catches it with his right hand, kind of uses his body as well, and then gets away and runs for, you know, six more yards. That, to me, was – and the ref didn't even throw the flag. And I think the reason he didn't throw the flag is it all happened so fast that Brown had caught the ball, so it became irrelevant. But, I mean, it was clearly a penalty, and there wasn't a flag thrown. And then, of course, you know, a jump ball with three Browns around, and he goes up and he go, you know, he's 5'11". All the other guys have to do is tip it. He's got to go catch it, and he go gets it from three Browns defenders.
Just unreal. I mean, we calculated already in our charting of his 182 receiving yards, you know, roughly right around half of those were yards after the catch for him. And let's not forget the hidden yardage on the deep pass interference, you know, as well. You might as well count that as receiving yards as well, too. And how long was that play? 40-something yards? You know, so effectively 20-something yards receiving, if you want to call it that, on 12 total targets. I mean, that's taken over a damn football game right there. And look, you know, when your offense is struggling, and you know, like the Steelers were in the first half, you got to do your best to get the ball in the hands of your best players, and that's exactly what happened. And it was clearly the difference in the game. I thought Martavis Bryant was kind of pedestrian. I thought his biggest catch was obviously his longest one, that 14 yards over on the right side, where I thought he did a great job of coming back to the football. But, you know, he couldn't get free over the top. And like you said earlier, only four, really five deep passes. One, of course, was a no play on the pass interference there. But Ben obviously wasn't in any mood to try to test the Browns defense deep. So that, you know, thus that you remember us talking, I think just the other day, saying, you know, Martavis Bryant is the kind of guy that, especially if you're going to draft him in fantasy, very, very inconsistent as far as, you know, he's going to give you maybe two to three catches for 30 or 40 yards for the most part. And then he'll have the big six catches, 140 yards, and two touchdowns there. So it's usually kind of feast or famine with Martavis Bryant. And then when you don't have Ben and Le'Veon Bell on the same page as they weren't in that game against the Browns, three receptions for 15 yards, that might be Le'Veon Bell's lowest receiving yardage all season. And thank goodness you had a guy like Jesse James, who really, we were on Jesse James quite a bit during the preseason. You know, the arrival of Vance McDonald really has lit the flame up underneath his butt, if you will. Six catches, 41 yards, two touchdowns, and that was a spectacular first touchdown by him. Ben squeezing that thing through the eye of the needle. I thought for sure that thing was going to get picked off there, but James comes up with a catch and a nice play selection, design, execution by James on that second touchdown as well. So six catches, 41 yards, two touchdowns. Definitely a nice day for Jesse James.
Yeah. just to go back to AB, just spectacular stuff. And he took over the game for sure. This is a bit of a convoluted stat, but courtesy of Football Perspective, Chase over there, who does some excellent work at his writing. Only two receivers since 1992. So you've got the data point. 25 years have caught 100% of their targets with at least 11 targets. That's the convoluted part. And 175 yards. It was Steve Smith in 2005 with Carolina against Minnesota, and AB today. So, you know, the unique thing is catching 100% of your targets when you're getting double-digit throws to you. And, of course, when you're like AB and you catch 10 balls, well, all of a sudden, you know, we talk about average. We were talking on Friday about average yards. You know, what kind of yardage are you going to average? And AB right up there, you know, with the 11 catches. And what did he finish with, Dave? 182 or something? So you can do the math at above 15 yards a catch. As you pointed out, the other receivers, not a lot, starting with Juju with the two holding calls. Eli Rogers, unfortunately, the first holding call, kind of killed the first drive. Eli Rogers has a nice little gain for 8 yards, it looks like, and that's going to, you know, get the Steelers offense moving and get them in positive territory. And then you're starting, but you're behind the chains. That hurt them. Martavis with just 2 catches on the day, and not, you know, he had one clean drop on one of those quick wide receiver screens. We didn't see Darius Heyward-Bey as a receiver. Vance McDonald, 1 target, and you can, I don't know if you want to call it a drop or not. He got hit as the ball arrived, but it looked like it was a ball on target to the right spot. So, you know, he didn't make the play.
It wouldn't have mattered anyway. Short of the chains.
Yeah, short of the third and 6 or 7, and he was going to get 4 or something. We didn't see Xavier Grimble. I think you charted him as playing a snap or 2. He wasn't any part of the offense. The only guy who did something was Jesse James, and not, you know, the wide receiver screen, the inside screen touchdown. Okay. And then the good hands on the bullet, in that tight window we talked about. The thing that the highlight of the game for me, or one of the highlights of the game, was Jesse James on that next to the last drive, I guess, catching a ball and faking a guy out of his shoes. He took it inside, took a hard step inside, and the defender went that way and actually went to the ground as Jesse James cut it back outside for about an 8-yard gain. We don't talk about Jesse James and nimble footwork often. I'm not sure we'll ever see that again, but that got a chuckle for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, as we noted there, Brown and James, big contributors, 17 receptions between the two, and Roethlisberger had only 24 completions in the game. That tells you a lot there. And, you know, like I said, if Roethlisberger gets a little bit more air underneath that pass to Martavis Bryant deep in the red zone there in what was the fourth quarter there. You know, this a little bit different ball game, at least.
Was that early second half? I think that was the third play of the second half. The deep one down the left side?
No. The one that was picked off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, was he targeting Martavis there? I never actually saw who he was targeting. Did Martavis give up on the ball down their left sideline?
Hey, it's hard to tell, at least on a TV tape. We'll see. I think Ben just kind of rushed the throw to get it out there a little bit.
Okay, because, you know, on Twitter, a couple people, I said, you know, Ben overthrew him, and a couple people said, you know, he dogged it. And I know that the announcer said that that Martavis and Ben had a chat on the sideline after the play. So gave some credence to that possibly being the case. Okay, that's the offense. The defense, overall, a good performance, I think, but a little disturbing or discouraging to see them give up that touchdown drive with 6 minutes to go, and it was kind of hot knife through butter. There were penalties, and then some missed tackles on that play, that the little swing pass that Crowell took down to the 10-yard line. I think there were maybe 3 or 4 missed tackles on that play. And then, you know, the Browns, I think a poor coaching decision by Hugh Jackson to go for it on 4th and 2 when you need 2 scores. But it worked. The slant for the touchdown and the big hit by J.J. Wilcox, which I guess we can tee it off with this, Dave. 4 defensive personal fouls, 2, I guess, helmet to helmet, 2 unnecessary roughness. That's killer stuff.
Boy, it sure is. It goes back to what we kind of opened the show with the penalties there. They helped Cleveland out a lot, on several of those drives earlier in the game too, with those penalties there as well. Too remember, and in fact, kind of almost back to back, I think you had T.J. Watt piling on or late hit on Kizer there after one of those sacks. I think wasn't that 3rd down on that one, which extended a drive, and then a play or two later, then Artie Burns called for defensive holding there. Those kind of things add up. That's 25 yards, bam, you know, just like that. So yeah, penalties definitely cost them. If there is indeed one drive that you want to get upset about, it is that last scoring drive. You know, 8 plays, 73 yards in 3 minutes and 5 seconds, I think, in that situation. That's the kind of thing that, yeah, I mean, you want to, if you shut that one down right away, you're in good shape. And they didn't even force a 3rd down until 3rd and 2 at the Steelers' 3-yard line. You know, and then of course they got that was that incomplete throw to Ricardo Lewis, and then came what you just talked about with the decision by Hugh Jackson to go for it on fourth and two there, and then you know that's Artie Burns being beat on that quick slant by Coleman, you know, and yeah, J.J. Wilcox was tried to separate him from the ball, was unsuccessful, but I think if there was one drive in that game that you know you want to raise your eyebrows about, it was that last one, that last scoring drive. The rest of them, they you know the penalties really I thought played a large role in it. Yeah, Kaiser missed some plays. There was that deep ball down the right side what was that kid's name, Matthews or whatnot, down the right side that against cover two that. That Hayden gave up a little bit of ground on, and that one that the player I think caught it, but caught it out of bounds. There was you know that one that they should have made, and then Kenny Britt. That was an awful drop that Kenny Britt.
Oh, go, yes,
go
it was.
Hey, go back and watch. Go back and look at that play. Look at the offensive and defensive formation on that. You are going to see that again. That's what opposing offensive coordinators comb the tape for right there. Those kind of matchups there. So you're going to see something like that. But that was just a brutal drop by Kenny Britt. But you know, look, a lot of times it you know. And, not executing on the other side of the football can be the difference in the ball game, and I thought Cleveland certainly left some plays out there. The seven sacks obviously looks great in the stat column, but I think you were the one that even noticed that the Steelers over the course of the last two seasons, quite a high percentage of their total sacks have come against Cleveland. And seven on Sunday. Now, I went back and timed all those already. You know, I don't know where. There's no such thing as a bad sack, David, in my opinion. But there weren't many what we like to call high-quality ones because most of those times were well over like 3.5 seconds on those sacks. So Kaiser obviously played into that a little bit by not getting rid of that football when he should have. But, I mean, you're never going to fault the team for getting seven sacks. I don't know how much of playing up on the line. You know,
Javon Hargraves might have been the most impressive, just bull rushing his guy, running right over him. That was probably, I'm guessing time-wise, I can't remember each one of the sacks, Dave, but I'm guessing time-wise, that might have been the quickest one or right up there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Someone asked me what were the highest quality ones last night. I thought the first one, was it the first one by Watt or second one? I think it was the second
Watt. Watt and Alualu got him on the first one, and TJ got full credit on that. And then the second one was a long one. He came, just hustling, coming around from the backside again, and he got him. So it would have been the first one.
Right. The first sack was a bit of the higher quality. I think the one with Hargrave. Was that the final one? Was Hargrave the final one? I've got the times here. I don't have them in order.
Yeah, but I think that was probably was the last one.
Okay, 4.39 seconds from the time of snap to the time the quarterback's on the ground. I mean, here are the snap time. Here are the snap to quarterback down times on those seven sacks. 5.62. That's a lot of damn time. 5.01, 4.28, 3.71. I'm thinking that might have been the Hayden one, right? The Hayden off the edge one. 8.03. It's not hard to remember which one was the 8.03 sack. That was the Watt second one. 4.50 and then 4.39. So those were your sack times. Once again, you're not going to argue about seven sacks, but most quarterbacks, I think, would have been able to get rid of the football in a lot of those situations.
Yeah, we saw some commentary on Twitter to that effect. Deshaun Kazi's got to know that there's a big difference between an incompletion and a sack. And, you know, he seemed to be willing to hold on to the ball. I saw his comment after the game that he said he's able to take those big hits because he played a power run game in college. Well, that's nice and interesting, but you don't sign up for that stuff. And him on the sideline, when you knew he wasn't going to get the first down or get into the end zone, he got absolutely teed up, can't remember who got him on that play, but you know, that's if you're a Hugh Jackson or a Browns fan, you're going, get the hell out of bounds there. Don't that just totally unnecessary to take that hit. Dave, the penalty on TJ Watt, you know, we can debate whether he got in there late and whether he actually hit Kaiser. The play that concerned me was Ryan Shazier's penalty. And look, we all know defenders, it's tough when quarterbacks are going to slide because they start their slide and you may have already started your move into tackling him. And it's unfortunately, you know, no matter which team you play for, it's the defender's responsibility to not hit the quarterback in that situation. And Ryan Shazier came in like a missile on Kaiser. And, you know, I think it's probably fair to say that Shazier had started his move to make the tackle. The thing that concerned me about it, Dave, is Shazier speared him. I mean, he came in with his helmet down there. Now, he didn't hit him in the head, but I mean, I'm worried. You know, we've seen Shazier lead with his helmet. You know, we saw it against the Bengals when he got Gio Bernard last year. I'm concerned for Ryan Shazier that he's always got his head down on some of these tackles, that he's going to, you know, he's putting himself in harm's way. What did you think of that play?
Yeah, I thought unnecessary. He's probably going to get a FedEx.
All four of them are going to get fined.
Yeah, FedEx. The one I would argue probably doesn't deserve to be fined is William Gay's hit. That ball was loose, right? I mean,
I thought it was helmet to helmet. Did they not call that?
They called unnecessary roughness. You know, I forget the verbiage that was used there, but the ball was loose.
It was loose. But I thought the penalty, and I could be wrong about this, I thought they called it because he got him with his helmet. Now, it's always hard to tell, you know, is the initial contact with the shoulder or the head, but they definitely did. He definitely did at some point get him with his helmet to the head.
Sure, but the ball's loose is my, you know, do you want to go defenseless receiver there? Okay, I guess, but the ball had already hit the receiver's hands and was loose. Now, had he caught it, was he still going to get hit the same way? Yes. Okay. So, but you know, if there's any of those calls I meant to take a GIF or GIF of that. I'm gonna start saying GIF or GIF every time. That way I cover myself. Of that, send it to Mike Pereira to get his thoughts on whether or not that, you know, that should be a penalty there. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Watt will probably get fined.
Wilcox is getting fined for sure.
Shazier will probably get fined. Gay will probably get fined. And as you said, Wilcox probably going to get fined as well there.
You think he knocked himself out? You think he was out cold there?
He didn't look good, did he?
Yeah, I sure thought he did. I sure thought he was knocked out.
This is a guy, though. Look, if you go back and look before, the, you know, after the Steelers had got him, you go back and look at his tape, even back to a couple years ago, that hit on Odell Beckham Jr. there. Wilcox broke his own damn nose on that play. I mean, the guy is not afraid to hit. And, yeah, that might cost some money and all, and obviously it resulted in a touchdown. But I wonder how many receivers are going to see that during film work going the rest of the season there. And maybe that makes a difference in a play or two later on in the season when somebody makes a business decision, as they like to say.
Pro Football Focus has tweeted out that week one passer rating under pressure, Ben was second only behind Alex Smith with a 118.8 rating. Now, I don't know. They say minimum 27 dropbacks. I'm sure that's 27 dropbacks for the game. These guys weren't under pressure 27 times. And I don't know exactly how they define that. But if you're looking for a positive of Ben, that would be, you know, again, I don't know. I don't have the full context of what pressure means in this situation, but good there, Dave. Who were the best players on defense? I mean, you know, we've talked about T.J. Watt. The interception was a terrible throw by DeShone Kaiser, but it was a really athletic play and a really good catch. He obviously was involved in the two sacks. Chicolo had two sacks. I thought Hargrave was excellent. Nobody in the secondary really stood out to me. I thought I would say it was a pedestrian effort by Joe Hayden.
I thought Hayden. I mean, Hayden got turned around on that pump fake down the right side there. That gave up the big gain, and you know, really, really outside. I thought Hayden played all right. Look, I mean, keep in mind, you know, overall, I thought defensive effort was fine outside of that last drive that we talked about, the last scoring drive. But keep in mind that Hayden's new, Wilcox is new, Mitchell is new. For all practical purposes, he is. He missed all the preseason. That was his first regular season action this year. So there hasn't been the communication to go on with those players in the secondary. Hilton logged a lot of snaps there. 40 something snaps in the slot there as well there. So you know, I
take it back. I thought Gay did some nice things.
Well, Gay was beat on the on an early pass over the middle there. His guy ran away from him, and on one other kind
of yep. They did. You're right. There was one of those plays there. The Steelers, you know, he and T.J. Watt missed the tackle, and then Shazier missed the tackle. I mean, four guys missed the tackle.
You know the best thing about Gay was beat on that play, but at least he was close. You know what the beauty was? You could see a lot of Steelers running with a lot of Browns players across the field.
Yep.
In that game, so
yeah, that was a good throw by Kaiser. He did get beat, but it was a good throw and catch.
And then one other one, Gay got rubbed off coming out of the inside there. He got rubbed off by a route combination there and gave up another throw over there to the side, and then of course, the throw to Lewis or Coleman, whichever one it was that the penalty was on there. I thought Hayden was okay. Sean Davis not a great game, I don't think. As a deep safety there, that penalty on Njoku was costly, obviously, but you know. I think the secondary will get a little bit better, you know, the more they play together moving forward here. You asked about the people who I thought played well. I thought Lulu had a nice game. Watt obviously had a nice game. Chicolo did some nice things out there on the edge. And, you know, Hargrave, obviously, I thought played some good snaps. And Hayward as well. They did a great, you know, all things considered, David, they did a great job, I thought, against the run. The two running backs, Crowell and Matthew Days, combined, I think, for 20 runs, 20 carries in the game. And I think I tabulated only six of those were, quote-unquote, successful runs. So, good on them there. Yeah, I could do a little less with seeing Matakavich give up kind of goal line scores there. You know, Kaiser, of course, kind of bounced off for his score, but Matakavich was, of course, one of those guys in there. And not sure why you have Matakavich and L.J. Fort in the game.
Yeah, they went with the jumbo package in there and had, you know, all those guys in. And, you know, Matakavich got himself in the right spot, just – Kaiser spun off him.
Yeah, just couldn't make the tackle there. But overall, you know, I'm fine with a defensive performance. I think if you're a Steelers fan today, most of the complaining that you're going to hear is going to be about the offense, and that certainly is understandable. So, and look, you know, I thought Kaiser, they might have him something there in Kaiser, you know.
I love the pick. I think, it's not the view of the Browns isn't going to change until the view of the Browns changes, which means they win five or six games and you say they're not the worst team in the NFL. I guarantee you they're not the worst team in the NFL. If you saw any of the Colts without Andrew Luck, that was an abomination, their performance. The Jets aren't going to be a good team this year. Boy, you think people are pissed off in Pittsburgh with the offense. The Bengals, Andy Dalton turned it over five times with four interceptions. They get shut out in Baltimore. This Browns team, their defense is fine. They're solid. They're running around. They're athletic. And, you know, Dave, from our conversation with Scott Petrak, I didn't expect to see as much of Njoku as we did. I mean, he was in there right from the beginning. I thought Kaiser, you know, aside from getting the ball out of his hand, I thought he acquitted himself perfectly fine for a rookie playing his first game against a pretty decent Steelers defense. We'll call it that, and certainly an aggressive Steelers defense. So, yeah, if I'm a Browns fan, with the running game, the thing that would have disappointed me, and as you pointed out, look, these sacks aren't all on the offensive line. I mean, at least three or four of them were coverage sacks. I mean, if Joe Hayden's getting in there, spin move, and then turning into the quarterback 4.5 seconds later, and that's one of the faster sacks, that is on the quarterback. So I'm not going to kill the Browns offensive line, but you expect a better play out of them. So, yeah, I do think they're on the right track and where they're going.
Yeah, I think Coleman's a decent receiver. If they could get him one more over there, Njoku, I'm a big fan of Njoku's after studying him prior to the draft there. Duke Johnson, obviously talented out of the backfield. I don't know why they didn't maybe try to use him a little bit more than what they actually did there. Here's something to think about. 6 of the 20 completions that Kizer had went to running backs yesterday. 6 of 20.
That sounds about the right percentage, right?
Yeah, I mean, they use their backs out there, and he wasn't afraid to go deep, was he?
No, he took more shots down the field than Ben did, and he used the middle of the field more than Ben did. You know, we've talked about Ben's trouble historically, some trouble with the cover two, particularly against the Bengals. As I say, the Steelers didn't attack the middle of the field, very often in this game. We would be remiss not to talk about special teams because obviously the Steelers got off to as good a start as you can on the fifth play of the game. Tyler Matakevich comes clean through. And Dave, I don't know if we talked about this, but I remember at least making a mental note that in the preseason, it looked like the Steelers were going after the punter a little bit more aggressively than in the past. And there were a couple times where they were close. And if you watched it, after the first block, Rosie Nix just misses coming in and getting a block, I think, on the second Browns punt of the day. But Matakevich came right through. The ball takes a fortuitous bounce, and Chicklow picks it up. And, you know, if you're a Browns fan, I mean, you saw what Twitter did. Twitter just crushed the Browns, down 7-0, 5 plays in, and you've already had the ball. but from there, the Browns outscored the Steelers. Not that it makes any difference, but so special teams. Eli Rogers appears to be the punt returner. That might be one of the bigger surprises of the game. There were some opportunities, all different spots of the field, to use Antonio Brown, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, and Juju and Watson back there. I mean, Juju and Watson back there to return kickoffs as well too. Look, ain't nothing wrong with a punt block, right? we don't. It seems like it's always the Steelers getting them blocked at inopportune times. So good to see the Steelers start off the game. You know, I don't know too. Did that hurt the offense because it ended up being quite a while before the offense took the field.
No first downs in the first quarter.
For the first time, Steelers 5 of 13 on third downs. The Browns 3 of 12 in that game. And the Browns, look, for all that the Browns did right on offense, they only averaged 3.8 yards per play. Okay, and while the Steelers, for all that they did wrong, averaged 5.4 yards per game. Gain there or per play.
Hello, Antonio Brown.
Yeah, hello, Antonio Brown. And the turnovers, of course, balanced out and everything like that. But yeah,
if you flipped Antonio Brown and put him on the other team, the Browns win that game. hypothetical, but
hey, what do we say all the time, David? I mean, on a week to week, it's like 5 plays you can circle, right? In almost every game, that can be the difference maker there. And at least 3 of those in that game yesterday go in Brown's corner, right? I mean, at least 3. The final
sure.
one.
Sure.
Maybe
50-yard tip for sure.
Right. Maybe even 4 if you count the pass interference.
Pass interference play. Yep.
You know, so, one player does not make a team. Obviously, but if you wanted to make a strong argument for one in that game against the Browns on Sunday, it certainly was one Antonio Brown there. So, all right, what's your overarching 30,000 feet thoughts coming out of week
one? Yeah, one last little nitpick here that didn't make any difference in the game. But the Steelers called time. If I didn't put a clock management comment in, people would be disappointed, I think. the Steelers called timeout on about the 8-yard line with a minute 30 left in the minute 25 or whatever it was left in the first half. Completely unnecessary. You're going to run three plays down there. One of them was actually a running play with Le'Veon Bell, and they still left 45 seconds on the clock when they got the touchdown. Now, 45 seconds isn't a ton, but it was enough for a couple of guys yesterday to drive their teams into range to score points. You know, it's going to be tough for DeShone Kizer, but if that's Rodgers or Brady later in the season, you know, it's just – it was an unnecessary thing to do. So, again, didn't impact, and it's going to sound like a very small nitpick, but later in the season that can make a difference. I also didn't understand why after they kicked off, why the Steelers called timeout after the first play but then went into the locker room with another timeout. If you're going to make them snap it and see if they screw up, well, make them do it twice. I just didn't seem to be logical, at least in the thought process. Okay, 30,000 feet. You won a divisional game on the road. Yes, it was Cleveland, but you know the job is to go out and win football games. There is a lot of work to be done offensively. You just expect better from Martavis Bryant. You expect better from Juju. Certainly, like to see more 25 snaps. Didn't get targeted once. Vance McDonald. You know, the offensive line I think was okay. Not great. And Ben was okay. And we'll see if that's Ben's bad road game. If that's, you know, if that's how he plays on the road, that's going to be fine because he was adequate. He wasn't great. He was adequate. So I don't have with you like you. I don't have any problem with how the defense played. Special teams were, I thought, good. Eli Rogers was good returning the ball. Boswell knocked everything out of the end zone that he had. And Jordan Berry punted very well. He got the benefit of the one bounce on that short punt. The one punt he did not hit very well. But special teams were fine. So this one, you expect to see a lot better against the Vikings at home next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, a lot to improve on. Need to get those penalties under control. Another week with Bell. Another full week of practice for Bell. You would expect, improvements in this next game against the Vikings there. And really, some improvements on the defensive side of football as well, too. No, I'm not ready. And as I said, you're one bad throw by Roethlisberger in this game that was picked off from this being a 28-18 game. And really, it would have been 28-10, and with them trying to get it to 18. At the time, if he doesn't throw that, of course, if it's and butts were candies and nuts, the rest. But I think there's enough there to build on. So I'm not ready to go looting and start burning stuff right just yet with 15 games left to be played. If you're a Steelers fan, you should be interested in watching the Monday night game between the New Orleans Saints and Minnesota Vikings. Definitely will save us some time as far as, some scouting stuff goes ahead of that game for the site. And also an interesting game there. And Minnesota will, of course, be coming off of a short week, if you will. So that's something else to think about there. Boy, Andy Dalton and the Bengals. Oh, geez, David. And I think the Bengals play who? The Texans?
Thursday night.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Somebody's not going to be happy Friday morning. There's going to be a staff and a fan base that is not happy at 0-2.
And Baltimore, what we thought, they were, they're going to have a good defense this year. Pretty convinced about that. Joe Flacco completed 9 passes in that game. That offense looked a little bit out of sorts. Now Flacco obviously missed all the preseason and all with that back issue and all there, so something to hold on there. I think Baltimore's defense is going to have to keep them in a lot of games here.
You're right about all of that. And just the thing is, that's a Bengals game at home, a divisional game. That is a brutal loss for the Bengals. If they start 0-2 here, you wonder with that offensive line being as bad as it is, if they're going to recover.
Yeah, most definitely. And that offensive line in Cincinnati is bad. And if Dalton starts, doing some of the things that he did yesterday. And look, Cincinnati, Cincinnati's defense is going to probably keep them in a lot of games this year. But, you think Steeler fans are mad or upset this morning? Boy, how would you like to be a Bengals fan, on this Monday morning? Okay, What else do we
again,
have?
By the way, that game's at Cincinnati. They're a 3-point favorite. So, you know, if they're 0-2 and 0-2 at home, I mean, it's not quite shake hands time, but they're in a bad spot.
Jacksonville.
And it is Browns at Ravens on Sunday too. So you have both those teams will go right stay in the division and for the second one. So
yeah, and then Baltimore plays the Steelers in what, week four? So three of Baltimore's first four games are divisional games this year.
All right.
Jacksonville beating Houston 29-7. A quick hook. At quarterback in that game. Arizona losing David Johnson potentially for a long period of time is a very crushing blow. Eli, another takeaway from week one, Eli Manning is going to spend a lot of time on his back this season. And we already covered KC in New England. Look, a lot of teams look flat, I thought. Coming out of the shoot there. I thought that, look at what happened in Washington there against Philadelphia as well, too. And look, Indianapolis without Luck is a lot different.
0-16. 0-16 without Andrew Luck if he doesn't play.
Ooh.
Good win for the Raiders over the Titans, everybody's darling.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause and you like what we do, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Tons of stuff coming on Steelers Depot, breaking down this win over the Browns and looking ahead to the Week 2 game at home against the Minnesota Vikings as well, too. Make sure to say hi to David Todd on Twitter or if you see him out and about in Pittsburgh as well, too. David, that's all I have. We'll see you on Wednesday, and I guess we'll be talking to a Vikings beat writer, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll have to track somebody down. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.